Welcome to Business Talk with Megan McNulty, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of business success and reveals the strategies, insights, and stories that drive these professionals to thrive in the ever-evolving world of business. Whether you're an established entrepreneur, a seasoned business owner, or simply fascinated by the world of commerce, this podcast is your front row seat to learn from the best. Each episode, Megan will bring you engaging interviews with professionals from diverse industries who will share their triumphs, lessons learned, and the insights they've gained along the way.
So forgive me, I wish I was more educated on this, but you have the, what's the deal with Gaza versus the West Bank? Are they connected? Are they in separate spots? Like if Americans are looking at a map, both we have Israel, we have the West Bank, and we have Gaza.
Right. They're geographically two different portions of terrain. They're not connected. Gaza is actually on the coast with the Mediterranean, and then the West Bank is inland. And you know, you've heard this chant from the river to the sea, and it's the Jordan River, and basically that's the eastern side of kind of the West Bank. And essentially what that is that Hamas chant is that they are going to eradicate from the river all the way to the Mediterranean, all of the Jews. That's their goal. And so, I mean, it's pretty impossible to negotiate with those terms. I think that one thing that's really important to understand about October 7th, right? Put this into American context. Anybody who was born after 9/11, at least, you know, maybe elementary school or older, remembers exactly where they were when, you know, thousands of Americans were killed, innocent civilians, and this led us down, you know, 20 years of conflict around the globe, unfortunately, to very little substantive result, but it's the reality. If you put this into perspective of what happened on October 7th, so you had this terrible image on television of people jumping out of buildings, buildings collapsing, the Pentagon being a plane run into, and people died on planes, you know, crashing into Pennsylvania, you know, farmland, all of this stuff. And then you take that kind of image and you think, what if there were over 50,000 murdered in broad daylight in America on the ground, and then thousands of them were taken hostage, babies were burned inside of ovens, women were raped. And this is not hyperbole, this isn't my opinion, this is factually what happened when October 7th occurred. And then after all of this, and there are still hostages today being held by Hamas, and they will not say, you know, who they are, or who's still alive, and all these things, and they won't release the hostages. All of them were civilians. None of them were military targets. And then the world looks at Israel and says, nobody did this to America, right? I think the level of violence and grotesqueness of the attack on October 7th far exceeds what happened on 9/11. And as an American, you know, I don't think one life is better than another, but just the nature of the evil perpetrated is hard to imagine. And on top of that, then the world looks at Israel and says, show restraint, don't attack, don't conduct any military operation, just take a deep breath and let's talk it all out. Nobody did that with the US. Nobody would even consider of doing that. And if you were American at that time and you were an adult, you would remember that everybody was like, we want to kill whoever did this, and we want them to be punished, and we don't care what happens. And that was really how those wars were prosecuted, and sometimes not even related to the people who committed 9/11, right? So I think that when you put it into the context, you have to understand what the people of Israel are going through when they have lived an existential crisis of extermination their entire existence, this terrible atrocity being committed upon them, and then expecting everybody to, you know, basically tell them, hey, take a break, take a deep breath, calm down, and don't do anything. And I think that's an unreasonable request of anybody.
Right. And it's interesting, we haven't even got all the hostages back, which I think is crazy, but...
That's right. And the U.S. is still providing humanitarian assistance and creating, temporary, ports inside of Gaza to then, ground, transfer humanitarian assistance. So, there was a point in time historically when America gave more humanitarian aid to the West Bank and Gaza than all of the Muslim countries combined in a given year. And the US, as a matter of policy, refused to put any identifier on that support that it came from America. And I think we've done an immense disservice to ourselves in the sense that, hey, if we're gonna help you, then that's a two-way street. We're not just, going to help you and let you hold hostages of Americans or, help you and let you burn the American flag. That's not the way it should work. And unfortunately, our political institutions and the mentality of those in the State Department are allowing and perpetrating this kind of, abuse to the American identity. And I think it's wrong.
I don't think people realize is like who's actually funding Hamas. Is it Iran? Are they Iranian backed? Like, who is giving Hamas money? How do the Palestinians, like that region, how do they make money? Like, are they making money? Like, how are they paying for the people that live there?
Yeah, this is really interesting. The Palestinian issue is a very interesting conversation when it comes to governance, right? So you may have read in the news that the United Nations, some countries in the United Nations lobbied to give Palestine actual statehood. So to recognize it as like the 93rd state, member of the United Nations. Now they have observer status, but they issue their own passports. They have their own de facto central bank. They have banks from the region Palestine does. Yeah, Palestine does, and the Palestinian Authority. And they get hundreds of millions of dollars from Iran, from domestic commerce, from Qatar and other Muslim countries that are supporting them. So yeah, they generate wealth through those different means. And then of course, there's a lot of illicit means and activities.
What do people in Palestine do for jobs? Like, have you been able to, like, how do they support their families?
Yeah. So, it's like any location or place that is under, political economic duress, right? Which is that, when you have a population, it's very usually mercantile, right? So it's a lot of trading, buying thing in one place and selling somewhere else. But then of course, you have to have services and you have to have food and, people still need to get their car fixed or, fix things. So the economy kind of creates itself, but it is largely dependent on foreign aid. And the U.S. was a huge contributor to that foreign aid and still is, even in the middle of a conflict, right? A lot of the humanitarian assistance coming in there is coming from the U.S. as we speak. So what's unfortunate is that this kind of assistance gets, people accuse Israel of weaponizing aid. Look, when people control militarily and politically an area of land and then they determine who gets the aid that comes in, that's the definition of weaponizing aid. Right. That's not what Israel's doing. And it's not what the U.S. was doing. Israel's allowing the aid to come in and the U.S. is actually bringing the aid. So if anybody is weaponizing aid, it's Hamas. And they have for a long time. In fact, a lot of the IDF soldiers who, are going through and clearing parts of Gaza have gone into homes and apartments where they've seen, literally immense amount of wealth of people who are connected to the high echelons of Hamas, big screen TVs and, Gucci couches and tables and things that are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars inside these different houses they were shocked because most of the people do live, in a very impoverished life.
Wow. What's the association with Hezbollah in Lebanon and
Yeah,
Hamas or Palestine?
this is actually a fascinating kind of misconception by a lot of people in the West and in America. I remember I was giving a talk in Dallas years ago, and I gave the talk, and these two Americans, who were a really sweet couple, trying to understand what was going on in the Middle East, and they're like, "Okay, we get it. Sunni and Shia, which one do we support?" And I was like, "Neither and both." It's important to understand that this kind of schism between Shia and Sunni exists in the Middle East. And I think, for lack of a better analogy, the way I would kind of explain it, okay, giving me a lot of leniency in the analogy, is that I would think of the Shia as kind of like the Catholics and the Sunni like the Protestants, right? In the sense that you have a lot of different, schools. You have, the Salafis, the Wahhabis, you have Sufis, who are much more spiritual in nature in Sunni Islam, and there's many, many different variations. And then you have the Shia, and they usually have, some kind of like religious leader, Ayatollah Khomeini, or different ones in Iraq, who are kind of like their religious leader. And so it's kind of like the Pope, I guess you could say, for Shiaism. But what's important to understand is that there are many good Sunni people and many good Shia people who want to be Muslim, be left alone, and get to live their lives and have everything that we want in America. And that is, without a doubt, in my opinion, true everywhere from Tehran all the way to Yemen. But there are other authoritarians and military organizations who see that religion gives them power. And it doesn't only give them political power, but it can give them cultural, ideological, and economic power. And so the way that Hamas and Hezbollah, while one is predominantly a Shia-backed organization like Hezbollah, and one is a more Sunni-backed, organization, the fundamental idea is the same, which is that they want to use Islam as a justification to rule others, justifying violence in the process, and
Their
then being
power.
able to control levers of power. And so what you find with Iran, and this is part of the reason why, what you're seeing in the Middle East right now is really important to understand, is that from Tehran to Baghdad, up across Iraq, across Syria, down Lebanon, and all the way to Yemen, Iran has massive amounts of control of serious levers of power. They almost fully control Iraq. They control two-thirds of Syria. They fundamentally control all of Lebanon and half of Yemen. And then they
Iran
have, of course,
does.
Iran does. And they not only do it through, the IRGC, which is their Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, but they do it through local proxies, through, the Hashdashabi in Iraq, the Shia-based Iraqi, and there's other nationalities in Hashdashabi, Hezbollah, which is predominantly, Lebanese, but of course they have Syrian members as well. And then you have Hamas, Palestinian, and then you have the Yemeni Houthis in Yemen. And they govern and control the region at a fraction of the cost of the amount of effort the US puts in, but with 10 times the effectiveness, because they understand the culture, they understand the population, they understand the power of ideas, and they are being able to galvanize support and control populations with this ideas, predominantly a hijacked version of Islam. And to the point where, just to give you some context, the Houthis and the missiles that they launch, they get from Iran on the, Gulf of Aden, have reduced the economic prosperity of the entire country of Egypt, which is also a Muslim country, right? Of 100 million, the largest, most populated Muslim country in the Middle East, 40% of their GDP has declined due to stopping shipping from going through the Suez Canal. That is a monumental, shift in the geopolitical influence of Iran, simply by using a proxy force in the mountains with a couple of missiles. And what has the response been? Almost nothing to very little from the West, who has literally trillions of dollars of military resources at their disposal.
Wait, so they stopped the shipping. Who's dead? Iranian stopped the shipping?
The Houthis in northern Yemen, using Iranian missiles provided to them, has been able to, I wouldn't say completely stop, but has significantly reduced the amount of shipping. And now they have to go all the way you know, down around the coast of Africa in order to get to, you know, Asia and the Pacific.
But who does that hurt?
It's really important. It hurts everybody. And it certainly hurts Palestinians. And it certainly hurts lots of people in the Muslim world, because the cost of goods goes up, because the cost of shipping goes up, because you have to go so much further, right? So now, not only does it have a negative, but once again, Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, Hashdashabi, Iran, they don't care about people. And they don't care about the effect of this. They have an ideology, they have an objective in their mind, and they're willing to let whoever it is suffer to in order to achieve that objective.
And gain power.
And gain power. And to the point where there was a number of, you know, last year for about 90 days, there was something like 163 attacks by Iranian proxies on US bases. Three Americans were killed, and the US had almost no response. Part of the reason why Iran sent a delegation from Tehran to Baghdad to tell them to stop attacking US bases is because Iran is very smart. They don't want to upset people. They want to push the envelope as much as possible without an extreme reaction, because they understand that they're winning. They understand that there are neighborhoods in Damascus where the people don't speak Arabic anymore. They only speak Farsi, which means they're from Iran. That was not the case when I lived in Damascus in 2006. So they are being effective at changing the demographics, changing the ideology, changing the economics and the politics of the whole region. And they're being so successful, they're going to continue to push and push and push, but they do not want a response from the US and the West, because they know that the US and the West has the capability of being able to absolutely, you know, destroy it.
Wow, there's a lot there. What can you go over what a proxy is for people that don't know? Because a lot of times the US is accused of using proxies to, you know, support our objectives. How, when you say Iran has a proxies, which you just discussed, what is a proxy? How does the US fund some of these people, knowing that?
Yeah, I'm gonna make a distinction about the term proxy and partner that I think is very important. And once again, it goes back to ideology. And when I use the word ideology, I mean collection of ideas, right? And this is very important, because what we fail to do in America, especially in national security, is we fail to realize, and we have all these misnomers, right? That, you know, my enemy's enemy is my friend. That's nonsense and historically not true. Your enemy's enemy is still your enemy. And if you make him your friend to achieve a very short-sighted or near goal objective, you can be sure that person's gonna attack you as soon as that, you know, person that you were fighting together is out of the way. And Russia's a perfect example post-World War II with Stalin, right? This is, you know, essentially, you know, we ended up buddying up with Stalin. Maybe we didn't have a choice at the time, but nonetheless, it led to the Cold War and the occupation of the Soviet Union to parts of Europe. And then, you know, you know the rest of that. So I see a proxy as a group that is being used and manipulated by another group, usually of larger power, larger significance, larger notoriety, in this case, let's say Iran, that is providing not only funding, but ideology and objectives to be able to achieve their own goals, right? So Iran wants to eliminate the state of Israel. They want to take the Muslim world, and they want to be able to create a violent version of Islam that governs the whole region, and they want to control it. The only dispute they have with the Sunnis is that they can't agree on who should be in charge. But fundamentally, at its basis, they want the same thing. This idea of using Islam as a form of governance, justifying violence in order to control people, right? Now, I would say the US doesn't use proxies. They use partners. And what that means is that we try to find people that share what we believe are fundamental, similar ideas in what we're trying to achieve. Now, the US has been really bad at doing this. That's been our intent, and we've relied on partners like Turkey to do that. And then we were, you know, fooled. And I think that's our own fault, but nonetheless, And what I'm referring to is this clandestine program that under the Obama administration was created to create what was known as the Free Syrian Army to overthrow Bashar al-Assad. All of these people came from Turkey. They had jihadist ideologies. And fundamentally, you know, $2 billion later, the program basically completely failed. So it is more important that we understand what somebody is fighting for instead of who they are willing to fight, right? And I believe that the US is constantly trying to do a better job of this. We have historically been terrible at it, but that is not our intent, right? We're not just using these people to really achieve a goal. We're actually trying to partner with people who share our ideals. I think there are some instances where we were very short-sighted in who we partnered with, like the Hashdashabi, the Iraqi Shia that we essentially supported through the Ministry of Interior to fight ISIS. We just exchanged one ISIS for another, a different brand. It was Pepsi and Coke, the same bubbly, you know, colored drink that essentially had the same principles, but one was a little bit different and now controlled by Iran through Baghdad.
Okay, so let's bring it now kind of closer to home. So the Biden administration obviously has given Iran money and we don't have our US citizen hostages back from Hamas. And there's an election coming up in November. I mean, what do you think the Biden administration is going to do?
You know, I think it's hard for me to predict what the Biden administration is or isn't going to do necessarily. But I think what I would say this is that the Biden administration has seen one geopolitical disaster after the other, right? First, it was Afghanistan, and then it was Ukraine, and now it's Gaza. And who knows what will happen. And there's a lot of other things that have transpired in the meantime. And so regardless of what people want to say, the reality is the world sees America weak under Biden and different, you know, Russia, Iran, and others are using this opportunity to take advantage of that. And nobody can deny it. I mean, it's just it's a matter of fact or reality. What will the Biden administration do? I mean, right now, I think they're trying to minimize as much conflict as possible through a position of weakness, quite frankly, not strength. And I think that only antagonizes bullies. It only encourages bullies or encourages people who want to do harm. So I don't think it's going to work, but I think they're trying to do as little as possible between now and the election in order to get reelected.
Okay. So now also, and kind of like wrapping this up, you know, we're lucky to live in America and have opportunities to work and make money and all this stuff. And we, you know, believe in, we should be able to pursue happiness and have jobs and et cetera, et cetera. We have capitalism, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But we have this like woke ideology that's taken over a lot of our college campuses. And it's interesting that we just talked about everything's going on in the Middle East and people are protesting it. But a lot of these students don't realize that if they actually went to the Middle East, they'd be killed or kidnapped and they would just murder them. And I find it so interesting how I think it's our lack of education and why I wanted to talk to you today. And the history is that I don't think they were educated. I don't know. And you feel for like both sides, you know, there's valid arguments, but the fact that just the reality, people don't understand the reality. Do you have anything to comment on this of the reality of the world? Like people that you think you're helping are literally will murder you if you go over there.
There's a common saying, you know, you're entitled to your own opinions, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And one of the things that used to always drive me crazy is that people would say, you know, I would be talking and they would be like, well, in your opinion. And my first reaction is, look, if you can't tell the difference between an opinion and a fact, that's not my fault. That's your fault. I mean, you know, if you want to ask me and I present an opinion that sounds very factual and like, well, is that your opinion or fact? That's one thing. But the problem we have in today, and you said it best, right? In order to be a successful human being on this planet, you must have a foundational philosophy of how you think through the world and how you understand the world. And if you don't have that thing, then you're going to constantly be contradicting yourself with illogical, you know, decisions, opinions, views, and ideas. And what we have is not education. What we have is brainwashing. And these people are immensely ignorant. They are uninformed. They've been brainwashed by whatever narrative is being put in front of them, whether it's in high school or college. And what's really important to understand, and this is why I made that case about the value of Israel to not only America, but the world, is that we as Americans have completely lost sight of the fact of what it means to be an American and what American culture is. And the responsibility of that, not only is it a privilege, but it's a responsibility. And the responsibility is you are not entitled to hurt other people just because you have a different opinion. You are not entitled to be able to take other people's freedoms just because you think one way or another. That is the antithesis of what America is, not only as a culture, but also as a country and as government with laws. And the tragedy here is that people are justifying violence out of their own sake of being able to achieve or express themselves and their opinion. And we've got to stop this. You know, there are examples of this on both sides, in my opinion, and Americans need to realize that you cannot justify this kind of violence just to, you know, force other people to either think or believe the way you do. And we are in an existential crisis as Americans. And I think, you know, I saw this thing on I think it was LinkedIn, and this girl was talking to, you know, some kind of, I think it was a school board or something like that. And she was a young girl, and she was been taken out of school, she was being homeschooled, and she was making this statement about, you know, her education and her belief and her opinions and how, you know, she believed that she was expressing herself as any good American should, and she was articulating her opinion very clearly. And I'm not saying I agreed with everything that she said. It's irrelevant. The point is she was doing it within the constraints of our culture. She was speaking in the public forum, having political discourse. She was winning the argument based on her logic and her facts and her thoughts. And all the people did in the room who disagreed with her walked out. It wouldn't even listen or even be right. open to a yeah. discussion or a dialogue. So that that little girl's parents, every American today, regardless of whether you're a Democrat, you're Republican, you're Christian, you're Muslim, need to realize that the reason why people are flooding across our border and the reason why people want to go to America, anywhere I go in the world, is because we have a culture that believes in life, liberty, and not guaranteed happiness, but the pursuit of it. And that we have an obligation to preserve that culture and pass it on from generation to generation, from, you know, saying the national anthem, saying the Pledge of Allegiance, being proud to be an American and realizing how special of a country it is, and preserving that way of life, regardless of your ethnic, creed, or religious belief. That is what being American is. And we have lost sight of it, we're not preserving it, and we have an obligation to do that. Otherwise, we're gonna live in Gaza 50 years from now.
I know, very scary. And I think, you know, the reason I think it's important to talk about this is because a lot of Americans don't realize what's happening, that we really are affected by the conflicts in other regions, and we have a problem here. So it affects, you know, anyway, if the Middle East heats up, it's going to totally affect our economy and everything here. If we have another war going on, it's going to be a major issue. There's so many things. So thank you for talking. We could keep going for another 2 hours. It's really not enough time, but at least I think the conversation was good and it's educational and important. And I learned a lot from what you said, and I have a lot of homework to do now too. So,
well, thank you, Megan. We always have homework to do, and I'm sure there's a lot of things I could educate myself on and will continue to try to do so. I want to make an important point that you alluded to about the American people. And I think what's unfortunate, this conflict in Hamas should be evidence to every single American who does not believe, that believes that we should vacate the world and leave every country in the Middle East and, you know, just kind of build large walls and point our guns outward. That is the most irrational, illogical thing to do. And if this war in Gaza and the impact that Hamas is having on our streets, on our young people, on Americans every single day, ideologically, due to a conflict happening halfway across the world, if we don't realize that we have to be engaged, we have to defeat these evils where they lie in order to be successful and to preserve our way of life, because right. the people who are protesting and proselytizing these evil, hateful ideas under the name of Islam and Hamas are changing our culture as we speak, and they're destroying America internally. And if we don't deal with it at where it exists, and we don't do it productively and substantively, then we are going to lose. and we're going to lose our culture, and we're going to lose our country. And so this notion, the Matt Gaetz is the world, oh, we need to just leave. This is a guy who's never been outside of America. He's never been on the ground in these countries where I've lived for years. And his ignorance is also toxic to Americans.
I see what you're saying. It's very, very complicated. And you see it now. You see the college campuses. You just turn on the news here. It's on what's happening on college campuses. And it's pretty shocking. So thank you. Hopefully we can talk again about this.
Absolutely. Thanks, Megan.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing to the Business Talk podcast and leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us grow and improve. Thank you for joining us today. This has been another episode of Business Talk with Megan McNulty.